Honorable Mr. Minister, my lord, Chancellor Schramm, Mr. President, Dr. Ross, Dr. McMillan, President Emeritus Klink, honored guests. It is my honor and pleasure as Chancellor to welcome you to this official opening and naming of a new forestry agricultural complex, an experiment in a facility for interdisciplinary training, a dream fulfilled for many here today. I will not endeavor to give you details of this fusion of the two faculties, neither its function nor merits. As speakers who follow me can do this more knowledgeably and concisely. Before I proceed to call on each, I would take this opportunity to introduce our distinguished platform guests. I will not ask each to rise when his name is called, but rather request him to hold up his right hand or doff his cap. I would request further that applause be withheld until all have been introduced. I think I can say correctly that in terms of years and contributions to education and to the University of British Columbia in particular, this is probably one of the heaviest platforms we have had the privilege of honoring. And I'm very pleased to see this large turnout today as evidence of general interest. Now I will proceed to naming our platform guests. Right, second row, Dr. G.S. Allen, former Dean of Forestry, University of British Columbia. Mr. J. E. Lirsch, former Dean of Forestry, University of British Columbia, now a member of our Board of Governors and chairman of our important property committee. Dr. A. G. McKellar, Dean of Graduate Studies of the University of Alberta and former Dean of Agriculture of the University of Alberta. Dr. G. M. Schramm, Chancellor of Simon Fraser University, Dean Emeritus of Graduate Studies, University of British Columbia. Dean B.A. Eagles, Dean of Agriculture. Dean J.A.F. Gardner, Dean of Forestry. Dr. S.H. Spurr, Dean of the Rackham School of Graduate Studies, University of Michigan. Mr. T.G. Wright, former Dean of Forestry. Mr. R.S. Nairn, our architect. Front row to my right, Dr. H.R. McMillan, first Chief Forester of British Columbia and a longtime friend of our university. Dr. L.S. Klink, President Emeritus of our university. Dr. John B. McDonald, President of our university. The Honorable Ray G. Williston, Minister of Lands, Forests, and Water Resources. To my left, Mrs. Frank M. Ross, immediate past Chancellor of our university. The Honorable Justice N.T. Nemetz, Chairman of our Board of Governors. Dr. F.M. Clement, Dean Emeritus of Agriculture of our university. Your platform guest. It's now my pleasure to introduce our first speaker of today, Dean Blythe A. Eagles, Dean of Agriculture. Dean Eagles is a graduate in agriculture from this university of the year 1922, in which year he was a winner of the Governor General's Medal. He studied in Toronto under Dr. Banting and later at Yale and with the United States Department of Agriculture in Washington. And finally, before coming back to BC, with the National Institute of Medical Research in London, England. In 1929, he returned to UBC, and in 1949, became the Dean of Agriculture, which position he has held until the present time. He retires at the end of this month, after having made an outstanding contribution to our university and to the province in matters not only agricultural, but in the broader field of education. I'm going to say his first name is Blythe, which suggests something joyous. And I would think that this moment is a very joyous occasion for him in seeing something of a dream fulfilled. Dean Eagle, where are you?
Mr. Chancellor, Mr. Minister, Dr. McMillan, Mr. President, my Lord, Dr. Ross, Dr. President Emeritus Clink, Dean Emeritus Clement, honored guests, ladies and gentlemen, it is my special privilege to welcome you very warmly on behalf of the Faculty of Agriculture to the dedication of this splendid structure. In naming it after one of the great builders of this province, one is reminded how fitting it is that at this significant milestone, we should acknowledge and praise the clear vision and untiring labors of the pioneers who founded the university and of those who gave our faculties direction. John Masefield has said, "There are few earthly things more beautiful and splendid than a university. It is a place where those who hate ignorance may strive to know, where those who perceive truth may strive to make others see, where seekers and learners alike will honor thought in all its finer ways, will welcome thinkers in distress or exile, will uphold ever the dignity of thought and learning, and will exact standards in these things." 50 years in the life of an institution, while marking a milestone, is by no means old, as universities go. But since the Faculty of Agriculture is celebrating this year the golden anniversary of the admittance of its first students, I would be remiss if I did not attempt to recapture for a moment something of our background. We have among us some of those who were originally appointed to this university by its first president, Dr. Frank Fairchild Westbrook, President Emeritus Clink, the Dean of Agriculture, who admitted the first students to the faculty, and a fellow student and lifelong friend of Dr. McMillan, and Dean Emeritus Clement, who for 30 years formulated its policy and gave it impetus. Dean Clement is wearing not the robes of his graduate degree from Wisconsin, nor of his honorary doctorate of this university, but his bachelor's hood in agriculture from the University of Toronto. We're also glad to see with us other early appointees. I don't know just how many, Dr. Barse, Professor King, Dr. Buck, Dr. Laird, and possibly Professor Lloyd. We're pleased to welcome so many of our graduates from far and near, and to have among our guests those from federal and provincial government departments, from industry, from our sister universities, and in particular, one of our distinguished speakers of this evening's symposium, Dean McCalla, Dean of the Faculty of Graduate Studies of the University of Alberta. I should like to take this opportunity to thank the members of faculty who have contributed unstintingly to the development of the concept of this building and its facilities. It began when President Mackenzie asked Dean Allen and me to plan a building for joint faculty use. And I should like to pay tribute to Dean Wright, Dean Gardner, and Dr. Wellwood, to Mr. Nairn and his associates, to our contractors, the Northern Construction and J.W. Stewart Limited, and to the many people from physical plant and the administration who have assisted us with the manifold problems of construction for the fine spirit in which our task has been approached. The university over the years has changed greatly, but has retained its fundamental aims. The Faculty of Agriculture has had and will continue to have a unique and valuable task to perform. It was built on its own foundations. It has its own traditions and history, its own soil, you might say, and its own resources. We have carried our contribution beyond the community in which we have developed. A particular instance among many that I might cite is the impact it has had on plant breeding. I refer to the early work of Dean Klink with alfalfa, carried forward over the decades through the careful work of Boving, Moe, Laird, Brink, and others, performing feats which before embryo culture and end-season pollination were possible, were remarkable achievements. It is not without pride that one finds that concepts behind the molding of rhizoma, alfalfa, are widely used in breeding programs throughout the world. Although rhizoma is only regionally adapted, part of its gene complement is present in more than one quarter of the alfalfa of the United States alone. This building will permit us to effect recent advances through the integration of the ideas and techniques of more than one scientific discipline. In this fusing of the disciplines, our library will play a significant part. We commend our librarian, Mr. Stuart Stubbs, and his assistant, Mrs. Laurie Bronners, for their efforts on our behalf. In these surroundings, which have been so generously provided through the farsightedness of the government of this province, of our president, Dr. John MacDonald, of the Board of Governors, and of our many friends and private benefactors, we look forward to a fresh surge of energy. As my successor, Dr. Shaw, whom we are happy to have with us this afternoon, takes over, may the accomplishment of the Faculty of Agriculture be even greater than in the past. And may the visions and the dreams of President Westbrook, Dean Klink, and Dean Clement continue to be translated into realities. May the faculty ever continue to heed the motto of President Westbrook, "To a mess, it is yours, it is up to you."
Our next speaker is Dean Joseph Gardner. Dean Gardner is an honors BA graduate of the University of British Columbia, graduating in 1940. He received his MA in 1942 here and his PhD from McGill in 1944 on industrial and cellulose chemistry. He studied under Drs. Hibbert and Purvis at the Pulp and Paper Research Institute. He then served 3 years in the pulp and paper industry. 1948 to 1964, he served with the Forest Products Research Laboratory in Vancouver and was director of it for the last 2 years of that period. In 1964, he was named Dean of Forestry at our university. It's with pleasure that I ask Dean Gardner to address you.
Mr. Chancellor, Mr. Minister, Dr. McMillan, my lord, Dr. Ross, Dr. Klink, honored guests, ladies and gentlemen. It is a pleasure and a privilege to welcome you all here on behalf of the Faculty of Forestry. We are thrilled that so many of you are graduates and friends from industry, government, and other universities have honored us by coming to this dedication. To mention only one, Mr. Mike Gregg, one of the two Sawdust twins who were the first graduating class in forestry in 1923, is here with us today. We are proud of him and of the records of our many graduates who have distinguished themselves in service to our industry, government, and universities. Unfortunately, Professor Emeritus Malcolm Knapp, well known to all our graduates, who served faithfully for many years, could not be present today. This day is a long anticipated one for forestry at the University of British Columbia. For the first time since instruction began here in forestry 45 years ago, adequate facilities specifically designed for forestry are available. This new building provides modern facilities for instruction and research in the wide range of subjects now necessary to a proper education for forestry. It acknowledges the great and growing necessity of wise management and use of our forests and land resources. Here will be educated the future managers, planners, and policymakers. From here will graduate, we hope, those broadly educated young people who will help resolve the perplexing problems arising from the conflicting demands on forest and land-dependent resources. Here will be educated a growing number of the research scientists now urgently needed to solve the many problems we face in ensuring optimum growth, protection, use, and regeneration of our forest heritage. This building recognizes the interdependence of forestry and agriculture. By exposing our students to different specialists in both fields, we should develop a broader resources use viewpoint in our graduates and thereby help to avoid some of the resource use conflicts and errors we might make in the future. The building has been completed just in time to accommodate our rapidly growing enrollment of undergraduates and graduates in forestry. It represents planning and sustained collaborative efforts of many people, the architects, the contractors, the staff in forestry and agriculture, the Department of Physical Plant, the administration, the president, and the Board of Governors. Dean Eagles of Agriculture has worked on the project enthusiastically and cooperatively since it was first conceived over 10 years ago. Deans Allen and Wright and Professor Wellwood of Forestry also contributed extensively. We who will learn, teach, and study here wish to thank them all most sincerely for their efforts in our behalf. Thank you.
Mr. Chancellor, Dr. McMillan, distinguished guests, and ladies and gentlemen, this university has many occasions to conduct business with the Honorable Ray G. Willison in his capacity as Minister of Lands, Forests, and Water Resources. And in my capacity as President of the university, I've had the privilege of working with him and even traveling with him on many occasions. I can say to you that I have found him always to be a very hard-working person, a very honest person, and a very thoroughly competent person in his capacity as minister. And this province is fortunate indeed in having a man of his stature holding the important portfolio of Minister of Lands, Forests, and Water Resources. He has, in addition, had a close association with this university in other capacities, Mr. Willison is a graduate of UBC, and last week, two further members of his family graduated from the university. His son received his doctorate in medicine, and his daughter-in-law received her doctorate in chemistry. We welcome the Honorable Ray Willison in all of these capacities, and we welcome him as a representative of the government of British Columbia. Most of all, we welcome him as a good friend, the Honorable Ray Willison.
Mr. Chancellor, Mr. President, Dr. McMillan, Dr. Klink, Mrs. Ross, Dean Clements, and the Chief Justice, and fellow guests. First of all, thank you, Dr. McDonald, for those kind words of introduction. This is indeed a great honor for me today, and a very great surprise, Mr. Chancellor. It will go down in all history. I think that this is the largest and most influential crowd that's ever got together for a shotgun wedding that's ever happened in the history of mankind. This shotgun wedding that's taking place today has particular significance here in the province of British Columbia, because I think we, more than likely any other area, recognize in this province that the growing of trees is actually a crop, and the most important crop that we are harvesting from the soils in this province. They tell us at the moment that some 70% of the landed area of this province can be classified as forest land, and a relatively small amount is given the classification for agriculture. But I think if we take the broader view and accept the proposition which is being practiced, that we are growing trees in perpetuity, and we are trying as best we may to gain from the soil the best advantage possible in the growth of resources, then I think possibly we are doing our job. I think it's an unusual commentary possibly to make, but the fact that an industry which provides for all, and in this province the forest industry is the chief economic provider for the people in this province, it must have adopted the father role insofar as this university is concerned, because we've gone for a long time, you know, with father and the patch on the seat of his pants, while son and daughter and the rest of the people were more commodiously outfitted. But the day has finally arrived, and this very beautiful structure, designed with the cooperation, as you have heard, of the members of faculty, the members of the Board of Governors, the people from industry and the architects, have taken the best brains of all, and then the best workmanship, the best skill of our architects, and have wrought this edifice which we're going to open this afternoon. I think it's a tribute to the industry represented here. It's a tribute to the dedication of the people who are represented by that industry. And indeed, it's a tribute to the University of British Columbia for honoring these two particular faculties. And I, as representative of the provincial government, and on behalf of the Premier and my colleagues in the Cabinet, offer sincere congratulations to all of those people who have played a part in the concept and in the execution of this very, very fine plant. I am sure it's going to do much in the future to to even further enhance the industry which is presently number one, and to bring in to closer cooperation the needs and aspirations of both the foresters and the agriculturists, so that we go forward together cooperatively rather than go forward with any feeling of conflict concerning the best use to which our lands may be placed. I think it's a special tribute to Dean Eagles, listening to the people this afternoon. I hate to admit this on behalf of the foresters, but he apparently either had sufficient will or sufficient stamina or sufficient something or other. He wore out four foresters on the way towards the planning of this building. So if there's a little more agriculture in here than there is forestry, I think we will be able to give Dean Eagles proper credit. It must be wonderful for a man who has dedicated his life to academic work, such as the Dean has done, to on his last official act in service for this university, should be able to come here today and participate in the opening of this building, which must be the real culmination of a very dedicated and active career on behalf of education in the province of British Columbia. And over and beyond that, my own foresters, moving backwards and forwards within the industry and without, I think they too have brought a feeling of a pragmatic approach to the job that this faculty and this building is going to have to do in the world of tomorrow. But ladies and gentlemen, you know that isn't my real purpose for being here this afternoon. My real purpose is to, I guess, go right back to the Bible, because the Bible said the wise men come from the east, and some quipster said, and the wiser they are, the faster they come. One of the ones that came many, many years ago to the province of British Columbia was a fellow named Harvey Reginald McMillan. He didn't have much to do about it, but he was born back in Newmarket, Ontario, back in about 1885. And when I was looking up a few things about him, I found that he first went to the Ontario Agricultural College, and when asked why he went to the Ontario Agricultural College, he gave then, I think, the line which has guided his philosophy and actions ever since. Because according to the word I've got, he said he was going to get the most for the least by going to the Ontario Agricultural College. Whether that's true or not, he didn't stop there. Because in 1906, he furthered his work in agriculture by graduating from the University of Toronto, and then went forth 2 years later to get his master's in the science of forestry from Yale University. And this young fellow, just out, started from the top, as has been his hallmark down through the years. Because in 1911 and 12, we found he was assistant director in the forestry branch of the then Department of Interior in Ottawa. And it didn't take him long in looking over the forestry prospects across Canada from this lofty perch in Ottawa to find that the best place to work in forestry, if you were going to work there at all, was in the province of British Columbia. And so in 1912, Mr. McMillan accepted the post of chief forester of the province of British Columbia, except there was no forest service and there's nothing here. When he was appointed, they had one man. And so what we owe to the start of the British Columbia Forest Service in this province today is due to the foundations laid, the inspiration given by Mr. McMillan when he came from the East in 1912. As you know, those were war years. And in 1915, he was called back to Ottawa to serve as a trade timber commissioner. He was back here in 1916. He was back to Ottawa again in 1917 as director of munitions. When the war was over, he made the real step for which he is known. He came back to the West and formed the H.R. McMillan Export Company Limited, which was in due course, through many years, to lead to McMillan and Bloedel Limited, a firm of which you all know. Again, in the Second World War, he was called back. He served as timber controller. He served as chairman of the Wartime's Requirements Board. And he organized the Wartime Shipping Limited. And for these jobs, for which he was on the dollar a year category of payment, a grateful country, at the close of hostilities, awarded him the Order of the British Empire. And they weren't finished with him yet, for after 1951 and 52, they again called on his services in NATO and asked him to be the Canadian representative of the Production Council in London. And then finally, in January 1955, he retired his official position in his own company and started then to work for everybody else. Of course, he'd been doing that all down through the years. And I think that's why you're here today, and I'm here, and I think we all have a bit of a feeling of warmth as we attend this ceremony in this particular place. Because not only down through the years has Mr. McMillan been an industrialist who has contributed to the welfare, to the growth of this province at the highest level. He's always had time for his fellow man and the interest in his fellow man, and in particular, he's had an interest and a particular interest in this university. And it's been felt in the various faculties, in the Faculty of Forestry, in the Faculty of Fisheries, in the library. As a matter of fact, he wouldn't tell you, and likely no one would tell you, but I would guess if you added up the contributions this man has made to this university, that no other single man in our province has contributed as much of his time, his energy, and his wealth to the success of this institution as has H.R. McMillan. And therefore, I think it's of special significance today that when we finally erected a building joining together the faculties of agriculture and of forestry, that we honored not only a graduate, a double graduate in agriculture and forestry, not only a very successful civil servant in the field of forestry, not only a very dedicated Canadian who gave of his time and ability when needed in the Canadian scene, not only one of the most successful industrialists in the history of this land, insofar as the forest industry is concerned, but over and beyond that, a man who has been interested in his fellow men, in the generations that came after, and that when the jobs of the day have been over, he's taken the time in the evening and at this time of life to spend particular time and influence and dedication in furthering the causes of this university. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a great pleasure for me to officially name this agricultural forestry complex the H.R. McMillan Building, and to officially declare it opened now. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to officially thank the minister for his address, also Dean Eagles and Dean Gardner. And it is my pleasure now to call on Dr. H.R. McMillan to take a part in this ceremony. When one has had 36 years business association with and enjoyed the warm friendship of a truly great man, it is difficult to be brief and to do justice to this friend on such an occasion. However, the minister has made my job the easier in that he has touched on those points that I might have touched upon and has done it in a very eloquent way. I would only add that Dr. McMillan is passionately fond of Canada overall, and of British Columbia in particular. He is passionately fond of knowledge in every important sphere of life, and particularly appreciative of the role that universities must play in the development of our country. The University of British Columbia, as has been stressed by the minister, has received on many occasions the benefit of his forward thinking, and it has been entrusted with his greatest benefactions. It is now my pleasure, ladies and gentlemen, to ask Mr. H.R. McMillan, CBE, BSA, MF, DSC, LLD, to do us the honor of unveiling the plaque which gives this building its name.
Mr. Chancellor, Mr. President, and all these other important people, I'll have to cry a little bit, and then I think. Firstly, I didn't address the ladies and gentlemen. I did that deliberately because there are ladies and gentlemen here, amongst whom I don't include those who have been speaking. There are a few things that come to my mind about this building and other things. One is that I would like to pay tribute to Dr. Ross, who first presented this idea to me and suggested that I might like to pay for it. I had to think quickly. I didn't like to say no to such a great lady, but I thought that they're going to have it, the government's going to have to pay for it. If I use any of my money for any purpose, I will use it for something the government won't pay for. And I think that worked out very well. They did get the building, and they got some other things that the government would not pay for. But I give full credit to Dr. Ross for any little thing I've done. As I have been thinking about this country today, I remember that I came here on a job 60 years ago and had a bit of a look at it. And I thought to myself, if I ever get a chance to come to BC permanently, I'll do so. And I believe that is an idea that still holds good in Canada. I fear that some of the educating we are doing is educating exports, who, as soon as they have their education here, will go to the USA to enjoy it. I think the time has not yet come when that is justifiable. My thoughts go back to when, trying to figure out how many years ago, 55 years ago, I think, I came to British Columbia on a job. It had happened when I got here, they thought they'd hired the wrong fella. I was too young, but I fitted the specifications. The specifications were that they had to have a trained forester, and he had to be a Canadian. It happened in that particular year, 1912. I was the only one that could say that that fitted me. I got the job, but when they looked at me, they wished to God they hadn't got me. I looked too young and fragile and unwise, but the minister was too proud to fire me. It would be that he had made a mistake. He waited. I think that's the habit of ministers. I don't know. He waited until I made the mistake, and I made a good many, but he didn't catch me at them. Then I'd like to remind our ministers who was here today, who has been so kind to me, that we had a much more competent group of ministers in those days than I think we have now. It could be proved by the fact that the total government revenue was $10 million. The first year I got there, that was the highest revenue they ever had, and they got along without borrowing any money. Well, they're different now. Well, I do remember that the cabinet of that day, very different and more down to earth than the cabinet of today, my minister himself told me that when he found out the revenue that year was $10 million, about a half of them went out and got drunk. It was too much for them. They didn't know what to do with $10 million. The cabinet today, I'm sure, could handle $1,000 million and wouldn't bother them at all. That shows how much we've progressed. At that time, the value of the total forest revenue of British Columbia was about, I've got it written down here, I think, I got to carry somebody around with me to look after my glasses. I want to show you what the intervening cabinets have been able to do. Our revenue then, the value of our forest product then, was about $14 million. Now, the Prime Minister of this province says it is about $1 billion. I don't take credit for it, but it all happened after I got here. We then had 10 foresters, and now we have about 1,000 in the province. I think it's too bad that Dean Gardner didn't take credit for that. And about 1,000 have been trained in the University of British Columbia. We have planted, speaking to the younger people here, the older people won't see any of the benefit, but for the younger people, for the parents from here can go home and tell their children that we have now planted about 400 million trees. And to give credit to our Minister of Foresters, that's the last thing I'll say, that practically all the high quality forest land of British Columbia is now on the road to the best scientific management that it deserves. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. McMillan. The next of the ceremony we have is the planting of a dogwood tree. Possibly, Dr. McMillan, that will make the 400 million plus one. And I trust, Mr. Minister, that you will do us the honor of planting that tree. I think we go over in that direction. And this brings to a conclusion the formal part of this meeting. Two announcements. One is you are all invited to inspect the buildings and to take a little nourishment in the way of tea or coffee and goodies. I hope that you will. Now this comment is because of a remark that looking about and we think of the forest when you look at all this brick and that about us. But I think if you look carefully, you do not have to look carefully in the building, but if you will just take the trouble to go through the whole area, you will find the fine use of wood in its natural stage in a big way in this complex. Dean Eagles now has a further announcement.
Mr. Chancellor, ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure on behalf of Dean Gardner and both our faculties to invite you to this evening's symposium, at which Dr. Stephen Spurr, Dean of the Horace H. Rackham School of Graduate Studies, the University of Michigan, will speak on the role of the university in natural resource development. And Dr. A.G. McKellar, Dean of the Faculty of Graduate Studies of the University of Alberta, will speak on education and research in renewable resources. We'll invite you all to come along. It should be a most interesting evening, and it will be followed by discussion and coffee and cakes and refreshment. We hope that you'll all be able to be with us this evening in the student lounge in the lower floor of this building. Thank you, Mr. Chancellor.
This meeting is now formally concluded. Thank you very much for being with us. It's been a great afternoon.